You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
The Around the NFL podcast is practicing with the first team offense.
From the training camp of the Dallas Cowboys, it is Around the NFL. I am Dan Hansis. I got heroes with me, Greg Rosenthal and his hairy legs, and Mark Sessler. Hey, guys.
This whole practice with the first team offense, I mean, camp and the preseason in general, let's be real, has become like less and less first teamers doing anything and not even showing up in the games.
Oh, we're absolutely like year 12 veteran who's slowly ramping up. That starting spot is secured.
I am. It's so exciting to be here at Cowboys camp. We just wrapped up a press conference with Zaddy himself, Mike McCarthy. That just, you know, pinch me, goosebumps moment for the old Zeuser. I mentioned Greg's wearing shorts, and you had two choices this morning, Greg. You could have wore the short shorts or the longer shorts. You chose the longer shorts.
Yeah.
And I thank you, because I have to say this to anybody at NFL Network, colleagues, friends, many of you. You got to be aware of sitting in the director chair at these remote things with your short shorts.
Why do we not know this by now?
The fleshy male inner thigh is not something we need.
And to be fair, you know, you'd probably get less of that with Greg, but a lot of the people occupying these director's chairs are like ex-NFL linemen and just beefy general and people. So it's an excess of that body part.
I mean, you don't have to mention my abundance of hair, body hair, though. I think that's rude. I think that's the way to go. We're at training camp. Everyone's in shorts. We're not. This is not NFL.
Me and Sessler are like Fonzie over here, kicking the jukebox.
This is an audio medium. Your guy though, Zaddy. It was nice to see him zaddying up front. Like, he is in his element. He very much.
Are you starting to get it?
I do.
What I see in Zaddy.
Well, I do, because
no.
I think he enjoys.
Greg is just cozying up to you, but absolutely not.
I think he enjoys being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Very much that he embodies that in a Zaddy way, where he's the man here. This is a nice time of year too. There's a lot to do. It's all about ball, but it's all about him. He's in charge too, and there's not a lot of pressure, and he's just like cracking jokes. He's so open with the media. I mean, he does 15-20 minutes on a podium, then he does 15-20 more minutes on the side with them, and it's just he's totally at ease.
So, like, just from another angle, like, he does all that, he does it all very well, and I think that he is in a very comfortable with his own skin, and I think that's where you're getting at a little bit with your definition of all this. He is comfortable in his leadership role. He's taken on more than ever before with this team, and he seems to be delighted by the whole thing, and he was great with the media, and he's joking with individual, you know, reporters. So I see all that. I just disagree with the base definition of where we've already talked about this.
Can we talk about the seating arrangement? I mean, let's show some respect, Mark. Me and Rosenthal are sitting with the reporters in the folding chairs
I knew this would become a talking point.
Mark, off to the side. Stand offish. You won't even give McCarthy respect of being in front of him.
So, first of all, like, it was a shaded spot, which was appealing to me. And it's like, I was just observing from a different perch. You guys had the same camera angle. I was like, we want to cover it from all angles, so I'll go sit in a different place.
I just wished you were
I knew that would be annoying.
Because you
guys
might have seen a different side of it.
I knew that would get on the radar. It was like, I'm not doing this. It's not because of you. It's because of the shade.
It's because of Mike. That's what I'm saying.
Right. But I mean, I got to see him from a side view. Ooh. Like, you saw him up front like that. So you could have, why not, if you're so fascinated with him, you could explore from different angles yourself.
I am fascinated with him. In fact, you know, it would be an abuse of my duties as host of the show. I had to ask Mike McCarthy a question.
Oh, yeah.
And let's listen in.
Dan Hansis around the NFL, NFL Network. Hard Knocks is starting up again this week. You were on the show a couple of years ago. Mojo Moment was a thing that kind of took off. I was wondering if that comes back year after year, or you change it maybe a different Mike Myers vehicle, anything like that?
Well, no, the mojo movement's still there. You know, we're using the padded practices, so we've done it every day since we've been in pads, and there'll be one today. So,
what was the greatest mojo moment of camp so far?
Greatest one so far. Yeah. As the offensive coach, it was the 2-point play. As the head coach, is probably, you know, the last one was pretty good for the defense. So.
I didn't know what any of that meant at the end. I mentioned another Mike Myers vehicle, maybe the we're not worthy moment of the day, the extreme close-up, something like that, something from the Wayne's World.
The thing I love, because, you know, a lot of these are, you know, people looking for a story angle or looking for basic data about players' health, and so it's a lot, you know, it can be dry. And you elicited, I think you took him to a new place, and there were giggles throughout the crowd, and that's the great question.
Got a couple of those, like, the turn back. Like,
well, who's
who
that
the
guy?
Is this guy? Which you always expect when you're the stranger dropping in amongst the beat reporters. I've always been uncomfortable, whether it's Combine or something like this, just because if I was a beat guy, I don't want anybody in my time that's just, like, dropping by. And I feel that energy sometimes coming off, emanating off other beat reporters who sometimes can be a little cranky.
Sometimes.
Not here, though. Not like,
well, the vibes
Oxnard
are good here.
The vibes are like very chill because they got to escape Dallas for a couple weeks. Yes. And hang out working like in a perfect Southern California beach community.
Helps. And isn't it? We were at Rams camp last year. They were defending Super Bowl champions last summer. And, you know, the Rams put together a really good operation there and everything was organized and clean and neat and friendly. But when you're rolling in, you get off the 101. And you head in and you start seeing the signs on the light posts, and you pull in here and you see all the people dressed up, all the fans, and the way they have all the merch and the food, and then you see the fields. It just feels bigger. And I think that's part, you know, we're going to talk to Brad Sham, the Sham God, a little bit later, who happened to be at that presser, a little stroke of good luck for our show, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys. And he was telling us, you know, he's been involved forever with the team, and Dallas, everything's bigger from the training camp to the super, to the Hall of Fame parties. And you feel that when you're here in a way that you're not going to feel it at other camps.
There's no question. You also have, like, you have the huge signs coming in Cowboys training camp so that everyone can take their Instagram pictures and stuff. But they are just literally bigger than they would be at any other training camp. They're like 40 feet in the air. You have the tower, old Bear Bryant style. And, you know, like Jerry Jones was playing in the SEC, but like back when Bear Bryant was doing this, where like the owner is literally at the top of a tower, like coaches used to do in the 50s, barking out to players. And he's literally three or four stories above all the players, like looking down on his peons with the huge Cowboys logo on that. Like, you don't see that at
all. Well, honestly, the other thing is because it's such a Cowboys.
It's kind of preposterous, but it's also, I like it.
That's part of the Dallas Cowboys allure.
Yeah, there's no way that you fly the Jacksonville Jaguars to Oxnard, California, and when you park, there's like 4,000 Cowboys fans trying to get in. It's like
on a Monday morning.
Yeah, I'm sure some of them traveled here to make a week out of it, no doubt, but like that percentage is way lower than it would have to be with any other
team.
I don't think so.
You got to be in Oxnard in August. That's what everyone says.
I'm saying that these are California-based Cowboys fans.
Yes.
Like, not that many other teams. Raiders, the Cowboys, a few others, tops.
They're mostly from the area. Almost all.
Anybody that works for the Chargers or listening right now, cover your ears. Like, they're not getting a medal in most popular L.A. teams. I think it's Raiders, no. Cowboys, Rams in some order. And that's amazing because you could make sense.
I think that's the order, actually. Raiders, Cowboys,
Rams. Obviously history here. Raiders history here. The Cowboys, they've been the Dallas Cowboys as long as they've been a team, and yet they have such a following that goes back to just the allure of it all. And I know there are people listening to the show that are even annoyed right now. I could picture like comments now. I can't believe they're doing kind of like a Cowboys episode of the show. But I think it's good to check in on this team because in addition to them being this bigger than life entity within the NFL, the team does matter, Greg, and we're going to talk to some players in the team. We're going to excited to get out on the practice field and check out what's going on there. But first, let's get caught up from the weekend, do some news.
I'm talking about the quarterback schools, the mini camp, the offseason, the training camp.
Yeah. Do you know where this is going?
When it was hot and you were tired. Everybody, you did one hell of a job, and the only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah! dug that out from the archives. That was actually, you think that was after one of the Super Bowl triumphs of the 90s, Jimmy Johnson. That was after the 1992 NFC title game, that famous quote. And, yeah, it's very.
Well, that felt like the Super Bowl.
It did,
with the Bills in waiting.
Right. I think they beat the 49er. There's some classic games there in that era. It's very important. We talked about this a few weeks ago, Mark, the team that everyone loves and the team that everyone loves to hate. And that's what the Cowboys are.
That moment, I think it's like I had a best friend who was a Cowboys fan, and he's the one that made me a football fan. And like watching how quickly Jimmy Johnson turned that operation around from a 1-15 nightmare post Tom Landry to a absolute juggernaut. And so I invited my friend. I'll tell you a really fast story. I was in Washington, D.C. in college, and there was a Redskins-Washington game. And we were on the subway just going to go to
Redskins-Cowboys.
Redskins-Cowboys. Yep. Yeah, we were going to go to a sports bar. And on this subway car, my friend had a Troy Aikman jersey on, and there was like thousands of Redskins fans. And like as we come to our stop, and you know the door is about to open, I just go, I want to tell you people something. And like the whole place went silent because they're thinking like there's a terrorist, there's a bomb. They go, how about them Cowboys? We walk out, the door's closed, and we're just like everyone's just giving us the bird as we're driving off.
Good stuff.
That's awesome.
Good memory, Mark. All right, let's get to the news. Alvin Kamara will be suspended for 3 games for his role in a fight outside a Las Vegas nightclub last year. He was facing felony charges, pleaded that down, took care of the legal side. Now the football side of it after a conversation with Roger Goodell last week. So he's out of the picture, Greg, for 3 games. Jamal Williams is now stepping into a role from Detroit last year where he set the team record. To really get his footing in this offense, I think this is very good news for Jamal Williams, who gets to start in a big-time role with the rookie behind him.
It's interesting they brought in Kareem Hunt for a workout or a meeting on Monday, so this could be dated or they might not sign him right away. I didn't think that was necessary, and I don't think it's a bad thing for Kamara to miss 3 games. I think that was probably on the average or maybe a little less than what people expected. And I did notice over the weekend, Nick Underhill, who does good work for NewOrleansFootball.com, like he had an article where they have data. They have sensors on Alvin Kamara based on the work that he's done this offseason. His burst is back. They can prove it, that he looks better. He looks different. I think he's going to have a monster year.
Well, you've been touting Kamara all offseason, so that's good evidence for you.
Greg's career is kind of hanging in the balance.
It is a little because we had our running back, draft, and I thought that was a tough moment for Greg.
Oof, rough.
We've been over that. I don't know. I want to know what he talked about with Goodell because it's like these suspensions come out, one guy 6 games, one guy 3, someone else the entire season, and like the actual variance of what occurred, like Alvin Kamara's situation was not minor.
No,
it was a terrible look for the league and for him, and he acknowledged that, and it's like 3 games felt soft. I'm not trying to like bang this hammer left and right, but it just felt a little bit like people forget about these things so quickly that the punishment's light, and we're talking about how fast he is on a monitor.
I think there's something to be said there that it's interesting to me, as people who covered the sport, what the media and what the public latches onto in terms of outrage and anger and what kind of
gets rushed.
A man
hitting another man like in a club does not get outrage. It just doesn't.
But, I mean, doesn't mean it's excusable.
And
or,
it's not. He's suspended 3 games. But to your point,
and
I,
by
think,
the way, it wasn't,
I think him taking
it
accountability.
It wasn't one-on-one, a man squaring up with another man in
right.
fisticuffs.
No.
This was a beating by a group of men that Kamara was a part of. It's kind of a vile thing, but it's something that, in general, people just move past.
I think taking accountability, settling the lawsuit, apologizing, saying it was his fault and that he regrets it.
That's fair.
I think that actually does probably knock a game off. Maybe it shouldn't be like that, but if you compare that to something like Deshaun Watson where he never really took accountability, he's still getting hugs from Goodell, so maybe it doesn't matter. I don't really know, but I think that helped Kamara in this case.
Chiefs edge rusher Charles Omenihue was suspended 6 games for violations of the personal conduct policy. That suspension stems from a domestic violence incident in January, so that was along those same lines. This is another violence incident involving a woman. He signed a 2-year, $16 million contract at the time of the situation.
Yeah, I think that is telling. I mean, I think there was some Deshaun Watson fatigue because when this happened last year, the 49ers were like, well, we're not worried about it. We don't think it's a big deal. He ended up playing for them in the playoffs after this incident. And you're right. It didn't get much attention at all. It didn't hurt his money. I think the NFL teams show you how seriously they take it, that he's still got a really good contract. I think the Chiefs are a little surprised, actually, that he got suspended, because I don't know if they would have given him all that money. And they are very thin in terms of their pass rusher. It is not a good pass rushing group, even with a Menahou.
Yeah, I mean, it may help move things along with Chris Jones to some degree, but he was brought in to essentially replace Frank Clark. I wonder if someone like Carlos Dunlap, who was there a year ago, could be brought in, because I think
Clowney.
Right. They would not have. Out there. I don't think they thought six games was going to be the result here.
No, it was so off the radar, and that's where I think media coverage can make a difference. It was so off the radar that, like, the 49ers didn't take any heat for playing him in the NFC Championship or anything like that, and the Chiefs certainly didn't take any heat for the signing, and I don't think it affected his money at all, but he's taking the suspension.
Interesting how it works. Yannick Ngakoue signs a deal with the Chicago Bears. Nice money this late. 1 year, $10.5 million, $10 million guaranteed for a guy that had 19.5 sacks over the last two seasons. Greg, that feels like, I know Ngakoue is not the same guy he was a few years ago, but for a Bears team that could not get to the quarterback last year, a nice signing. Also, Mercedes Lewis, the forever tight end, he latches on with the Bears for another ride.
From the 2006 draft.
Crazy. MJD's pumped.
I think he was in the same draft class with MJD. Am I crazy?
Yeah.
With the Jaguars.
Yep. That's why
MJD's pumping him up every Sunday.
Every Sunday night football, when we're watching it, Mercedes Lewis will be brought up in some capacity as somebody that needs to keep playing.
He's in his 18th year. I love that the Bears did that. I don't know if I love Ngakoue as a player. He's not good as a run defender. They immediately said he's playing every down, which says a lot about the rest of the Bears' defensive ends. But the money says that too. But I hate unspent cap space. I really think teams don't. When you have too, there is such a thing as too much cap space, and they had too much going into this offseason. They've tried to spend as much as they can, but I think it makes their team better. So, like, spend it.
Yeah, I think this got them to the floor. But this is a team with holes, but the pass rushing situation was pretty dire. I was surprised they didn't go and heat seeks some of the guys we'll talk about in this new segment that have signed somewhere else. I like Ngakoue, but other than that, you've got like DeMarcus Walker. It's a really young defense, and it's like Matt Eberflus is heading into another season where, like, you're meant to put a stamp on this side of the ball, and that was the opposite of that happened last year. It's like, I think he's under a lot of pressure to show that he's special.
I think they feel good about their linebackers and their secondary. The secondary is pretty young. But you're right. They were a terrible defense.
The Pro Football Hall of Fame, in other news. We've got to get out to the practice field. Yeah. But in other news, the Pro Football Hall of Fame welcomed 9 new players to the club this weekend. Ronde Barber, Darrell Revis, Ken Riley, linebackers Chuck Howley, Cowboys great, Zach Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, and Joe Thomas, along with defensive lineman Joe Klecko of the Jets and coach Don Coryell, famous of the Air Coryell defense. Let's listen to a couple quick sound bites, starting with Zach Thomas on a player that and a friend that he misses.
There's one person whose name I've yet to mention. His poster hung on my wall in college, and he was everything I wanted to be as a football player. He was my inspiration, and he became my teammate and friend. Though he's not here physically, he's here in spirit and in a bust in that building behind me. I'm truly honored to join him. Junior Seau, love you, buddy.
Very sad. And also connecting the past with his induction was Darrell Revis, Jets great and Patriots Super Bowl winner.
I didn't get the chance to play with this guy named Deion Sanders, but he was a prototype for me. What Jordan is to Kobe is prime to Revis Island. You came first, and I wanted to play just like him. You were the roadmap to greatness.
You got to be giving
your speech.
Thank
you for paving the way.
In Canton to be able to just connect yourself to players of all time.
In another forum, I would bump up. If someone else came up with that out of thin air, I would have a problem with it. But Darrell Revis, okay.
It was funny when he mentioned the Patriots quickly, and the crowd just booze. It's all Jets fans. They're not Patriots fans there. Rooting on Revis. It was kind of like a funny, I wouldn't say side plot, but it was like I saw in the NBC coverage of the Hall of Fame game when they were interviewing before the game, because it was like Rodney Harrison and Devin McCourty, and they're kind of giving him some grief about the Patriots, and he's feeling awkward with that. And there's just like and I think they were almost being – Rodney had a tone where he's almost being a jerk about it. It's like
– no.
Where it was like, you know, don't forget it, Jets fans, essentially, that he got his ring with that. Where Revis is like – come on, bro. Like,
I was just playing.
But he did play great for the Patriots, which I think actually was an important, not that he wasn't going to make the Hall of Fame, but I think it was an important coda to his career because Bucksy was underrated, but it was a little up and down. And he did have one more great year, which is something you see with a lot of these Hall of Famers, where there's that one year, like 10 years in, where they remind you of why he was so great. And that was him in New England.
And, you know, I have to talk about his Jets career then, if we're going to talk about that, just because.
By the way, we got CeeDee Lamb walking right by the set here.
Wow. He looks like an action hero. Watching him in his prime, that 08 to 12 when he hurt his knee, I'll never forget it. His ability to shut down the best player on the field just changed everything for Rex Ryan and that defense. And I'll always remember the first year of Rex when they seemed like they were out of the playoffs, and Rex even came out after a bad Week 16 loss and said, well, we're done. The season's over. And then a bunch of things broke their way, and they had a chance to make the playoffs if they beat Cincinnati on Sunday Night Football. And this is when Chad Ochocinco was in, seen as one of the great players. And Revis just erased him from that game. Then they had a rematch against Cincinnati the next week, and he erased Ochocinco again. And he just did that regularly. It didn't matter. There was no guy that always got the better of Darrell Revis. And
Stevie Johnson sort of famously was the one guy who would give him trouble. Where he was just like, I don't know what the hell Stevie Johnson's going to do. He just makes stuff up as he goes along.
That playoff win over the Bengals was a high point for the Jets, I thought, because the Bengals did not take them seriously at all, and they steamrolled them.
Well, beating the Bengals in the playoffs is something everybody gets to do, you know, or used to be able to. Finally, Joe Thomas, Colleen Wolf's friend and Brown's great.
With that said, it's the greatest honor of my career to be able to accept this lifetime award on behalf of all of Browns Nation.
Pipe down, Mark.
Cleveland, you could always count on me. Thank you so much for allowing me to count on you. Don't forget to keep showing up for each other. God bless the Cleveland Browns, God bless America, and God bless football, the greatest game of all. Thank you.
Mark, they're calling you. They're calling you home.
Joe Thomas is someone
I just snorted.
Go home.
Allow to guide me.
You can go home. Hear the angels, the sirens, waving you. Berea.
Okay, so home, by home you don't mean like the afterlife. You mean the Browns, okay.
Yeah.
No, it sounds the latter sounds more comforting, but I mean I don't think being coerced into it is the organic way.
There's
to
There's no coercement
go.
At all here.
None, not at all.
He said it himself. Joe Thomas said, stay together, stick together.
Separate from all of that.
I think he was talking to you.
Separate from that tomfoolery, like Joe Thomas, you know, we know him a little bit. He's been on our show. Like, I texted him just to say, like, the one thing I think about him is, like, we got to know him a little bit more as a person and as a broadcaster. And I know Colleen, like, thinks the absolute world of him. And he brought her into, like, his fold of, like, all these ex-NFL linemen hanging out, eating steaks, drinking beers. And, like, Joe Thomas is a great guy who I hope continues to do television and broadcasting and use his creativity for a long time, because it's like he started out as this player that logged 10,000 plus consecutive snaps, never let anyone down. I've never done 10,000 things in a row. Who else has? And he's a special, special player and a good dude.
Greatest Brown of the last, 25 years?
He was also great from his first ever game. 30. Like, there's no growth process. He was great right away.
It's crazy because he really talked about all the different quarterbacks he had, and that he literally said during his speech how he ended his career on a 1-31 heater. And I was like, wow, it's actually really unique to be like a first ballot upper tier Hall of Famer, no doubt about it, and associated with losing. Like, it's a fascinating, and he like took it in such a, I don't know. Like, such a, it didn't seem to bring him down at all, which is a credit to the man. I do have one, like, turn in the punch bowl take on the Hall of Fame. I'm into the Hall of Fame. I would love to be a voter.
I know you are. So
I would like to be a voter.
So,
yeah, I have thoughts. And I don't know what the solution is here. There's too much posthumous guys getting in. And I don't mean that they don't deserve to get in. I mean, this is like the greatest moment in their careers, even posthumously, and for their families. And it should be a moment of celebration. And I kept thinking, because, you know, Ken Riley is no longer with us, the Bengals cornerback Don Coryell. Chuck Howley is alive but wasn't able to speak just because of medical stuff. And I'm thinking, like, this was so bittersweet for all of their families and everyone. It's not – it was a celebration, but they're also, like, really sad about it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't, like, let them in. I'm saying, like, they should come up with a way that, like, the same amount of people should be getting in, but do it early, because this is – it's like a celebration for the living. I honestly think, like, it's a little bit of an issue when four
of
the
family gets –
four
the,
of the night
– the remaining family does get – so I understand what you're saying.
I'm not saying don't do it. I'm almost trying to speak for them, because hearing them talk about it too, they say it's bittersweet. It's like the definition of bittersweet that they can't be there.
I think the problem with
Greg,
because I like, –
you
I
can come
everyone,
up structurally with, I think, getting the Veterans Committee in, guys, maybe a little – earlier in the process.
There's
maybe
nobody
it's not
here
a 30
that
year
thinks
wait.
That it's better that they should be celebrated as a dead person than a living person. So that's I get we all get that, but like there's a bottleneck, because even if you look at the next year's eligible class, it's guys that we literally covered on this show. It's like there's so many eligible people. It's like you just need to because when we were growing up, you'd let like 5 people into the Hall of Fame every year, and there was a lot of diminished smaller classes. Now you're adding categories, new items, and the classes are getting bigger and bigger, so you just have to
I'm
ask
just saying
how
that
big you want
this is
the
a lot of
be.
People take this very seriously, and I wonder if anyone is with the like whether they've thought about logistical things they can do, which is basically just shorten the period from when you're like eligible person the first time around and the veterans shorten it up.
This better be Greg
this
oriented.
Is football heaven.
What is this?
We're going to heaven. We're going to go to a Cowboys practice.
That's sirens, leave them alone. Or is this maybe to your point? It's hard to
say.
So.
Yeah.
Eight o'clock delight.
Oh, no. Logan Wilson, Cam Jordan, and Malik Hooker, who's out on the field right now, the safety for the Cowboys, all got contract extensions this weekend. I love that Logan Wilson deal. And Cam Jordan, I think that's his fourth contract.
Wait, I mean, the Bengals under Lou Anarumo and keeping Logan Wilson, keeping Jermaine Pratt, there's consistency. I love that for this team.
I thought he was the best free agent linebacker that was going to be available. Justin Houston to the Panthers. Nice.
What's this doing in 8 o'clock? He can still play.
I figure we got to get moving. Broncos have had a lot of injuries. Jonas Griffith, who's a rotational linebacker, but a contributor for them. And then Riley Moss, a rookie, who's maybe going to start at cornerback. Both out. Griffith for the season, Moss for at least a month. And then Jeff Okuda, the cornerback for the Falcons, out at least
they
a month.
Cannot get it going. Jeff Okuda, the former first-round pick of the Lions, trying to start over. All right, that's what's happening in the news. All right, boys. It's time for us to hit the practice field where the Cowboys are doing their thing. We'll come back here, talk to some players, share some takeaways. Does this sound like a good plan? Mark, is this a good plan?
I think it's a master plan.
Good.
Might suit you up. Put you out there with third string.
Hey, offense. He played.
I did. I've taken a look at the current players, and I don't think that's a great idea for me.
Well, a lot of big men.
All right, let's see if Mark can get out there and still play the guitar. But before that, I want to tell you something. Promo time. Football is back, and NFL Network has every preseason game, including 23, live. Big names putting new cities on their backs, a new class putting their names on the map. Listen to this. Your team is back in action. It's time for football. The NFL preseason, August 10th through the 26th on NFL Network and streaming on NFL Plus. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm not guarding like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Just off the practice field is the great linebacker of the Dallas Cowboys, Leighton Vander Esch. Leighton, welcome to Around the NFL. Another W for the D in practice today?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was a pretty even practice today. It was fun. I mean, they got theirs and we got ours, but that's what makes practice fun is when you got a good team. I mean, it's battling back and forth, and they're going to get some and we're going to get some. So it makes the atmosphere fun. Everybody's flying around having fun.
I don't know if we've ever had an athlete, a player, right off the field. You still got the gloves on, the cleats, the pads. Are you a little worried? Like, it's too intimidating for sitting next to Mark here, who was a former.
you're intimidated.
Yeah, but was a former player.
In like 1991 in Pee Wee football, but he did play.
Yeah.
Renowned.
Oh, man. He's like, how do I answer that question? There's no
I didn't
answer.
Even know that was an answer.
Right, let me ask you this. So this Dan Quinn defense really balled out last year. Okay, where do you think the Cowboys stand in that conversation of the best defense? Do you think it gets overlooked a little bit when they talk about it?
I mean, we're focused on proving ourselves every single day. So it really doesn't matter what we did last year or the year before. We're trying to better that and be absolutely elite this year. So, but we have to come out here and put in the work every single day to do that. So we can talk about it all I want, but at the end of the day, it don't matter. And that's not what we're focused on. We're focused on being the best version of ourselves and as a crew, as a defense.
About a week ago, this video surfaced of Diggs and Dak getting into it in the end zone. And, like, the thing that annoyed me and annoyed all of us is, like, the next day on all the talking head shows, everyone's asking, is this an issue? Can you just clear up, that, like, in training camp, you've been doing this for weeks. It's hot out. You guys are challenging each other. Don't these things happen all the time and you just move on with it?
Every day, probably every minute occurrence in practice. It's normal. So
two football guys chopping it up there.
It's just
want to clear up that myth.
We're all used to it.
I saw you guys getting after a little bit today. You were coming off the edge a lot. You've been in kind of an off-ball linebacker mostly, but just at least in this practice we were watching you mostly coming off the edge. Is that a different role for you? What are you doing?
Yeah, really just trying to grow my game and just be more dynamic, just – keep growing in any area I can, just keep developing. Because, adding tools to your toolbox, it's super important in this game. And obviously, it can make it tough on a lot of other offenses. So just trying to better myself as an individual player so it betters the defense.
I'm curious, like, you're kind of the quarterback of that defense. You've been with this defense now a long time. Looking at the Eagles in your division, obviously that's a team that got to where you guys want to go to last year, the Super Bowl. When you're watching them, when you're on the field against them, are you more worried about, like, what are they going to do next and trying to figure out what they're going to do? Or are you more worried about just, you know what they're going to do, but they just do it so well, how do we stop them?
I'm really worried about what we're doing because I know that if all 11 guys on our team and on our side of the ball are doing what they're supposed to be doing, nobody's going to beat us. So it's focusing on ourselves, really.
What about, during a practice like today or maybe even in a real game, does your mind ever drift and you're just thinking about like tacos or Xbox or other things? Or are you just
Barbie,
like a robot? Are you like super laser focused nonstop?
You try as much as you can to be as laser focused as you can. Your mind might drift here and there. Maybe if you're like, if you just subbed out or something. But I mean, that's what's important is if you can realize that and bring yourself back in and lock back in. That's the important thing. You got to be able to catch yourself in those moments. It doesn't matter if you're tired. It doesn't matter if you're thinking about anything else. You got to bring yourself, reel yourself back in and lock in every single play because those are mental reps that you can get on the side. Every rep during practice is your rep, regardless of whether you're on the field or whether you're on the side.
Like, I get that, but this is news for these guys. So.
Well, Mark's actually been thinking about tacos the whole time you were answering
so,
that question.
Last question, because you know you're a busy guy and fresh out the practice field. I got to make a question that's important and it counts. I'm looking at your cleats again. You're in full uniform. You're a gridiron warrior. There's a rip in the cleats. Do those disappear forever now, or do you have lucky cleats or cleats that you are attached to, or is that it for these now?
I just broke these in, so and I got a huge rip in them last practice, so yeah. I'm gonna keep wearing them.
Oh, you ride with them?
Yep.
Well, again, Mark, you can relate. I know.
To less and less of a degree.
Yes. Leighton Vanderesh, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here, and best of luck in 2023.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, there he goes, a tight five with Leighton Vanderesh. Mark, a little too much callbacks to your playing days or not enough?
No, I thought it was far too many, and I think we threw him off key a little bit with that, but that's okay. I think underneath it, he understood this guy did play roughly 2.5 decades ago, maybe.
That you, this guy.
Leighton Vanderesh, Greg, I mean, you made it very clear. I think you made the situation extremely clear, and I think you painted a fair picture of that I played irrelevantly as a youth.
He reminds me of a player that you could imagine playing 20, 30 years ago.
I agree with you.
The 80s or 90s. He always had the neck roll.
Yeah.
I think that was because of his injury concerns. But I always think of Wes when I think of Leighton Vanderesh.
Yes.
He was so in on that rookie season.
Jalen Smith, too, the two of them together.
Of Leighton and Vanderesh. And he's a good example of, man, NFL careers. Like, he's only been in the league since 2018, but he's had ups, he's had downs, he's had injuries, and it's cool to see him established now. He's one of the leaders of this team.
I mean, going into last year, it seemed like maybe he was already part of their past in terms of being an impact player, and then he has a really nice bounce back season, and he's an important guy, and maybe we'll start there as we were on the practice field. Very cool. It was very good vibes on the field. We got to watch some of the defensive drills, and we went and saw a really good long 11-on-11 with the Cowboys offense, with Dak and the first team really matching up against the defense. And we talked to Clarence Hill, who's covered the Cowboys forever, and he said it's been the defense most days, and this day was the offense was better. And yet, Greg, it seemed very hard for the offense to move the ball against Vanderesh and this defense in the practice that we saw.
Yeah, I guess at the very beginning, like, they hit a mojo moment, so that's a big spot for them. And in the run game had some moments, but they just couldn't protect Dak Prescott. He didn't have CeeDee Lamb out there, but it like looked like the 49ers playoff game, because within 2 seconds of every single one of these plays, he's facing an incredible amount of pressure, and they're not holding anything back. Dan Quinn is showing a ton of different formations. Parsons is all over the field. I mentioned how Vanderesh is on the edge, and they're winning time after time after time. If we had all the time in the world, I would want to ask, like, offensively, like, are you getting sick of Micah Parsons? Because he was in the backfield, he would have had 3 or 4 sacks in the plays that we watched.
Yeah, but then you go face lesser defenses, and I think all this work has a huge benefit on the offense. But you're right. I thought for chunks of the session, they weren't really trying to test the ball deep. They didn't have CeeDee. They were working on a lot of, like, throwing to running backs and doing stuff over the middle. But the one thing about being at these practices on the sideline, and they're catching a screener and coming within 2 feet of you, and it's like you get a sense for how massive – and gigantic these people are. And like, the Cowboys defense, to me especially physically, looks so intense. And it was these practices, like, they've been heated. We knew that there had been fights and stuff before, and like today it was just like kind of an eye-opener to see how hard they were going at each other.
I was thinking was like, don't come this way, because there's a couple times where the guys come hard.
Yeah.
And at that point, there's
if you're
in the wrong spot,
you die.
You're making headlines. You're getting tweets. You're living that down. So we survived.
I saddled up next to Mark, and I did throw out a hypothetical to Mark. What would happen if there was a collision on the sideline? You get hit. You just get caught in the wrong spot of the arm.
Right.
There's some nerve damage. There's only so much doctors can do at this time in terms of modern medicine and science. You lose the arm. You want to live at that point? Because you have to tell that story for the rest of time.
Yes.
That you lost the arm.
Answer your question, yes.
Like, that's your answer.
On the sideline.
It's a belittling, I have a family.
Right, it's a belittling scenario. I would essentially turn around immediately and sue the Cowboys and see what I can get out of it financially.
That's definitely, I'm sure we'll get a credential next year after that. I would possibly walk into the ocean.
Mm.
with a minus arm.
I just don't want to tell that story. It's over a terrible.
There's
yeah.
no way the story is going to make anyone more impressed with you.
No,
or me or Greg.
Greg seems to think that you know, it's something that he could tell with pride. I don't know.
It's not so much that, but I still believe I would have a lot to live for. It was just bad luck. Ultimately, I maybe wouldn't try
we'll
to
take
get
the high road, Rosenthal.
And you know, I've got my children to think about. But I was worried.
But what about your pride, Greg?
I have no pride. I lack pride. I was thinking, like, watching that practice, Deuce Vaughn is an inspiration for anyone like myself, 5'6" and under, to be out there. And they popped some running plays. They were getting excited. You could tell they actually took advantage yes. of Parsons' aggressiveness on one play and actually did pop a nice running play. But asking Deuce Vaughn to pass protect, and he was there
no,
with
that doesn't work.
He was there with the starters, and he did okay on a few. But then there were a couple that were like, okay, this is what training camp is for. You're trying it out, but I don't know if you want him protecting Dak Prescott on Sunday.
He's a fan favorite, though. We'll yes. see how where we are in October.
There's
November.
An unnamed person who told us that it's you want to get him on video and share it as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Deuce Porn because people just like to see a guy that little
yeah.
Thrive on the football field. And you did, great point on that you heard the players whooping it up on some of those running plays, Deuce included, because everything you read from the beat report is that defense has been winning. And seeing Micah Parsons up close, it's like,
it's crazy.
Listen, like, we don't know where he's going to come down at the end, but the LT comparisons aren't off base at this point based on what he's done so far. And the way the beat writers talk about him, it's in hushed tones. Like, he's literally ruining practice for the offense because they're just trying to get their feet wet and he's living in the backfield. So watching his combination of size and speed, everybody looks big and fast here when you're here, especially if you don't cover these teams day to day like we don't do that. But he stands out even more as just like this freak. It's kind of cool to see it up close.
No, their defense, I mean, it looks to be like picking up where it left off. I'll tell you one other person that kind of changed my mind about them a little bit.
Ooh.
Jerry Jones. Like, I mean, every time I looked, he's up in a like a stage somewhere taking photos with tons of people. He was walking guests around, like the fans were going crazy well, for him. I mean, I just say like there's owners that like they're billionaires and they vanish and like the football side of it.
Oh, but he loves it more than anyone else.
He's up in the tower, like pointing out
he
plays.
Lives,
so, you
he
know.
Lives for this. This is the world that he built. I was impressed by because he's, I think, in his 80s now. At one point, I saw him on the far side of one of the two practice fields here. And then I walked the corner and I came down the sideline towards where they were doing the 11-on-11. And Gerald was up in the tower,
right,
which was easily 100 yards away, and then an elevator or five flights of steps. How did he do it? I don't know.
Not a small guy either. Former, former, you know,
college player.
Former D1 athlete.
Yeah, that's true. Any other takeaways from practice? Mm. I got one. I posted it on X, Twitter.
Just say Twitter. It's fine.
Or X. It's really hard. It's tough. It's tough sitch. Tough sitch for the journalism community. Dak unfurled a beautiful deep ball that wasn't brought in. But as good as the running game was, like everything was checked down and short and everything was covered. So I do think there's so much with the Cowboys. There's so much coverage of Dak, the Dakness of it all, and the offense and the narrative around this team and the failure to step up in big moments in January. That the defense, and Van Der Esch, go under the radar a little bit. Parsons, not so much, but the defense has a chance to really carry this team as much as the offense.
You just line it up, and I would say the Cowboys or the 49ers should be the best defense in the league. Now, defense is very hard to predict, but to me, those are the two teams going into the season that I would go with because Parsons, like, yeah, he's had an all-time great start to his career, but he was like playing another position. Like he didn't even really know how to be an edge rusher. He was still playing off ball linebacker at this point in practice a year ago at this time. And like the sound that everything that's coming out around him and how he's showing up to this camp sounds like he's maybe at another level and him at another level with four or five defensive ends behind him that are really good and a really good secondary. They've got them all locked up. We mentioned the Malik Hooker. I just think this defense is loaded. And I talked to Michael Galkin, who's covered this team for a while now, used to cover the Chargers, now the Cowboys. And he said this is easily the best team he thinks he's ever covered between those Chargers teams and the Cowboys teams over the last
two years. And the offense is going through, I know it's still Mike McCarthy, it's going to be more similar than a complete, like, basic change on offense, but that's still a transition, but it's another year in Dan Quinn's defense. And it's like, Van Der Esch talked about adding stuff to his game, adding stuff to what he can do, and it's like, they're going to do that with all these guys. They just look completely cohesive.
It's cool seeing up close practice what these teams work on, because they have to be ready. Oh, here comes Jared Red Pies. They have to be ready for...
You got a little wave.
So Jerry Jones just walked by.
That was like a low, like a fist wave.
And it was just kind of like a wave.
It was a point.
Do you think he recognized us?
No.
Absolutely not.
I,
unless he remembers the time that I approached him at the combine.
Yeah, but we've been
night.
On TV. And
there's a chance. I mean, there's an NFL outside Network. Chance he saw the NFL Plus polos that we're wearing. But I think it's more likely that I kind of pointed to him first. I looked for the
I think
you know,
he recognized
recognition.
Me. I think. That's what I think.
I think it's very interesting to hear everyone's takeaways on this particular situation.
He's just like, I was a big fan of the end around back in the day.
We've accomplished a lot at NFL Media, and he is like, he's got his fingers in everything.
That's fair. Maybe he knows the podcast.
He knows me, probably. So I wanted to say, yeah, it's crazy seeing it up close. They have drills to react, the defense, how to react to a loose ball. They're doing scoop and scores and seeing how everybody even has a role with that you're trained to be ready for those scenarios.
Then like a 6'8", 320-pound guy is rumbling into the end zone, scoring a touchdown. He's very happy about
it. And they even build in a TV timeout. You hear on the sound system, it's like these guys then take the break because they're trying to simulate these things, be ready. One other thing, we got Michael Gallup coming up. I have one more thing. You guys want to throw out anything? Please do. Brian Schottenheimer will always be 31 years old. He's got to be in his mid-40s now.
Very vivacious.
Point.
I think he learned some secrets from Pete Carroll. He was out there chopping it up.
That's the first time vivacious has not been used to like describe a young woman. And I appreciate it. I think we should ungender vivacious.
You have to have a certain level of ungender vivacious. We will. Let's make a note of that. You have to wear the visor backwards. I think was it upside down too?
He's been doing that for a long time, but yeah.
To do that move when you are in your fourth decade, it takes a little nards. And he does it.
His father had some fire, and I see it in him.
He's putting the nard in Oxnard.
Here's another little takeaway, by the way. These refs are in summer shape out here. We put the nards
in Oxnard. Around the NFL. There's a sell, Eric. Anything else?
I think we covered it.
All right. With that said, we saw the defensive side of the ball. We're talking to Leighton Van Der Esch. Now let's talk about a very important piece of the offense, Michael Gallup. Hit it. All right. Our next guest is a very important piece of the puzzle for the Cowboys in 2023. Wide receiver Michael Gallup, welcome to Around the NFL.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me.
So happy to have you. Michael, this is read about it. You're a full year, another year removed from knee surgery. And you say that your mentally, you're all the way back. I was curious, as like a professional athlete, what was it last year that just felt different, and how are things in a different place now, in a better place?
I think just coming off, you know, really any injury, you gotta make sure that you have your mentals right. I mean, everybody says they're good, you know, but there's always something a little bit up under the table that you're not trying to express to everybody. Mm. But that was my big problem. I said I was good mentally. I really wasn't. But physically, I knew I was good. So I could go out there and do enough, but, you know, it wasn't enough to be out there, you know. I shouldn't have been playing like that.
Do you feel like you're in a better kind of a good spot here because they bring in Brandon Cooks, obviously CD's here, and now you're feeling better physically and mentally, and maybe they're not expecting as much on the outside, and it kind of sets you up nice to surprise some people?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's how it's kind of always been, you know, all my years here playing for the Cowboys. I just kind of been that, you know, third wide receiver, little outlier. But, I mean, if they get doubled, that means I got to be one-on-one. So that's easy pickings for me.
I was watching you out there in practice today, and I was wondering who would you rather go against, and what's the difference when you're lining up across from either Trayvon Diggs or Stephon Gilmore?
I'd rather go against Trey. Stephon, he just too smart. He calls out the play before you even line up. So, you know, it's pretty tricky playing with him, but they're both good competition. Either one of them, I like going up against either one of the great football players. Just helping me get better.
He's Trayvon sounds like he talks a lot. Do you talk back?
Trayvon talks more to Dak. He doesn't really talk to the wide receivers.
We learned that. Yeah. Do you like these camps? Like, I know it's been a grind at this point. You've been here for a long time. They always talk about it being you go away. You guys are a special team that goes to a completely different part of the country. You're hanging out together all the time. Is it like a bonding experience, or are you kind of like, I love you guys, but I need to have some of my own time? Like, what does the rest of the day look like? Can you get away?
You bring in your own bed?
Right. Yeah, I mean, McCarthy actually does it pretty well for us. He sets it up to where it's like, you know, we're not just in meetings till 10 p.m. at night and stuff like that. He's done, you know, figured it out that you don't have to be in meetings, 24/7. Everybody needs their own time to recover, have their own space. So I definitely just go back to my room because I know I'm going to be with you, at 7 in the morning again all the way till about 6.
What are you doing? Reading books, playing games, like – talking to people on the phone?
Mine's more, calling family and stuff, checking in on everybody.
I'm nosy, sorry.
This is definitely coming from Mark's, like, he's imagining himself as a player, and he was a former player, in Pee Wee, because he would be trying to get away from us. It would be too much time with his coworkers. He would just be, like, hiding out in the room.
Well, yeah, that's definitely understandable. I can hear it.
There's always a couple of those guys.
Does Mike McCarthy allow guys to, like, ship in their own beds and stuff? Has that happened with this team?
I doubt it.
And, isn't that show why the Cowboys are a team to reckon with? Because we'll sleep in, like, the beds that are uncomfortable here.
A dorm. It's a hotel. It's not too bad.
It's not the
at
same
least it's not like
bed.
A bunk bed or anything. Me, I get my own room now. So, we're up there a little bit.
Who did you grow up rooting for? Were you a football fan?
No, I really just rooted for players. I love watching Calvin Johnson, definitely Julio Jones, Crumpler, to be honest, and Michael.
Algie Crumpler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that one kind of snuck up. Like,
did the Cowboys ever get on your radar when you were like a kid? As like, why do the Cowboys get so much attention? You hear too much about these Cowboys.
I was doing too much other stuff. I wasn't even really playing sports when I was little.
Really?
I was out there on the farm. I was fishing. I was doing all type of stuff. I wasn't really into sports like that.
Wow. What is your? I know it's a long way off, hopefully, but your post NFL life, is it back to the farm?
Post NFL life.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to be a pro fisherman, to be honest.
Oh, I like
wow.
it.
Wow.
Fly fisher? Or
what? No, just straight bass. I ain't do that fly. That's too much work for no reason.
That's why I always say, like, with these parents that have their kids in one sport all the time, and it's just like focus.
Yeah.
It's like if you're good enough to be a pro athlete, you can just be like Michael Gallup, not caring about sports, not playing sports, out there fishing, and then you'll end up in the pros anyway.
Are you anti-farm now at this point, or are you just saying you don't want to make that the center of your activity?
I can't be anti-farm. My sister has like 400 acres back home in Georgia, so it's like when I go home, that's the only place.
We're
going
to set up like a point-counterpoint Michael Gallup versus Willie Nelson on farm life and the future of it in this country. Michael, can't wait to see you back on the field. I feel good, legit, not just because he's here. Michael Gallup is having a big year this year and is going to be a major reason the Cowboys are going to be better on offense this year. Good luck to you, good sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
There he goes. Greg, I personally had made the decision to not bring up Mark Sessler's playing days after we hit it hard with Van Der Esch, but you went right back at it. And you could tell Sessler is getting a little agitated.
Oh,
and I said, you're playing with fire, bro.
Mark, yeah. I it just came up naturally. It wasn't
naturally.
I feel
a
like
stretch.
It's a mind control attempt by Greg to body shame the person to his left so that his own body isn't compared to the giant player sitting to my left.
I mean,
that's an incredible theory. It's so wild.
It just
but
sticks.
Maybe you're right.
Everyone around us is laughing because they can see the threads connect.
No, they're laughing because they just got inside of Mark Sessler's mind, and it's a dark place. But
all right, let's ask.
Place.
I think that's
ask,
absolutely
wait,
a correct
let's,
theory.
Let's let our great team here, Parker, Eric, Jay, Randy, do you think Greg was attempting to body shame Mark by making the references to his playing career, Pee Wee, with a big player next to him? Let's hear it.
Yes.
No.
Big Randy?
Randy's nodding.
He's nodding.
Okay.
Jay behind the camera?
I think we lost some of the details there.
3-1.
So 3-1 says, Greg, it was nefarious.
I don't know if you've noticed, but my body's like immaculate. I'm huge. I'm strong. I'm big. That's why I bring it up to these players, because there's such a contrast between me and you. When from someone like me, it's like, oh, yeah, he's really picking on the little guy here.
Yeah, well, anyone on the audio version only can assess that that's correct.
Gallup, first of all, I liked him.
Yeah.
And I believe what I said. I think he is set up. It's a tough question to answer, but I can only imagine last year when you're supposed to be quote unquote healthy, but you don't trust your body, and you look at his numbers, they were so depressed. And he's almost like where Leighton Vander Esch was a year ago, where you've almost, are you moving on from him at this point in terms of viewing him as a key piece? But if certain things fall the right way and he's physically right, I think he could be, I think he could get back to being a 1,000 yard receiver, even with Cooks in the building.
We've seen it. I mean, it's just another lesson where, like, these guys, a year ago, he's forced to ask or answer all these questions about his physical body, his readiness, and a lot of it is mental. And, like, what are you going to say other than, like, yes, I'm ready? Because you can't expose any weakness. And, like, now a year later, he's admitting, like, yeah, my head was not in it the same way I would want it to be. Like, body trying to get there. It's like anyone that's coming off a major injury that tells us they're fine, like, it's a wait-and-see territory.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of focus, I think, now on mental health in terms of, like, how we cover the NFL. But that's mental health, too, in that, like, it's pretty remarkable how open and honest he is about it. It's like, I wasn't right at this time a year ago. And it is something I do keep in mind with these players, that it's like they're coming off the ACL and they're 2 weeks away from full contact and they'll be ready for week one. And it is a good thing to keep in mind that's like there's a lot of obstacles, and some will be fine, but some that are even on the field. I thought that shows a lot of confidence, I think, that you're able, if you're him, to just be so open and say that, and that bodes well.
Ready for week one is one of the trickiest things in the summer, because all these guys that are just trying to be ready, but are you all the way back? Are you physically back? Maybe not. Are you mentally back? Maybe not. And it sounds like Gallup was really neither last year, and that's not how he feels this year. All right, more fun. Let's talk to the voice of the Dallas Cowboys, shall we? Here comes Brad Sham, the Sham God. We are pleased and thrilled to be joined by the voice of the Dallas Cowboys, a man whose voice has become an important part of our Sunday flagship program. He had no idea until now. Here is Brad Sham. And Brad, you should know that I always, when I call your calls out, I say, Brad Sham, the Sham God.
When God Sham God was playing at Providence, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that a lot. Fortunately, I didn't think it was talking about me. But, Dan, I was not trying to be humble when I told you before. I'm glad that you play the highlights. And the reason I'm glad is my life is a lot better when they play well. Mm. And those highlights don't have anything to do with me. That's about them. You could be Vin Scully. And if the team stinks, you're never going to hear his voice.
No, so. We only play the winning highlights. So
exactly.
Like the Jaguars play-by-play guy had a few years there where he basically wasn't on the show.
There's a reason they're called highlights.
You don't like to cover a team that goes through some waves of intense chaos as the Cowboys have
done? I have. I've been. This is my 45th year.
You've seen it all.
Name an emotion and a circumstance. I've experienced all of them.
Well, with that said, you just got back from Canton where DeMarcus Ware, Cowboys great, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a man who's been around from the glory days with Landry in the 70s into the 80s, and then Jarrah, of course, in the 90s, and still the Cowboys, even without the
was
titles.
Was that a Jarrah? Did he just drop a Jarrah in there?
I thought Sham God was your nickname. He just makes up nicknames for everyone. Mike McCarthy's Zaddy.
I've written on NFL.com just casually Jerrah.
Yeah.
They never catch it.
By the way, if he's calling Mike McCarthy Zaddy, I think we've got a whole nother set of problems.
We've got large problems, trust me.
We've got a whole nother.
Listen, don't get me kicked
out
of here.
That's a whole new podcast right there.
Brad, my question is, like, you've been to some probably epic ragers. Like, I think Justin Timberlake played Jerry's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, stop there.
Yeah.
Is that
the ultimate party?
Yeah. I mean, Jerry built a tent. He built a city. And every flashy thing that you could think of happening in there happened, and when Justin Timberlake is on the stage doing a private show for you for 45 minutes and you're standing at the foot of the stage, I'm not looking for better than that, really.
Yeah, you were telling us before the show that I had no idea the players have to pay for their own party. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to be one that's complaining about it.
Well, no, Jerry was going to pay whatever, but I think, I don't know the percentages, but I know that through time, guys have had to pay for their own. And then so in the case of DeMarcus Ware's, I know that the Cowboys and the Broncos were officially listed as as putting the party on together, and I think that what that means is they made sure DeMarcus didn't have to spend any more than necessary. And I don't want to forget Chuck Howley either. When we're talking about the Hall of Fame, he was Tom Landry said he was the best linebacker he ever coached. And that we're just in an era now where if you're 35 years old or younger, you never heard of Chuck Howley until they announced his name. But he was a special player and a tremendous guy, great in the Dallas community.
I feel like this playing for your or paying for your own party is not cool on some levels. But especially, it's one thing if you're Troy Aikman and you've established yourself as like a multimillionaire 12 times over. But some of these senior guys, that what kind of party are they hosting? It would be like at a YMCA because you don't have that money from back then.
I would say maybe a little step up from a YMCA. Okay. Not that there's anything wrong with a YMCA.
Sure, it's a nice place.
But yeah, I would say a little more sedate, perhaps.
What are the vibes of the Cowboys now? You were there for the 90s glory years. Now there's been this long run, obviously, without getting back to the big game. Urgency-wise, this season, how important do you think this is for whether it's Mike McCarthy? Obviously, Dak is comfortable and under contract, but still it seems like there's a lot of pressure on this team.
Yeah, Dak likes to say pressure is privilege, and I really like that because it gives you an opportunity to see what you're made of or crack. But there's no question there's some urgency. How about that for a word? They've been to, the playoffs. Here's one thing that when they made the playoffs and won 12 games for the second year in a row, it was the first time in like 15 years they had done those two things.
Right.
So you can't say they're not successful. You can. That huge part of our population that defines success only as the person holding up the hardware at the end of the year, they would say they weren't successful. I'm not of that mind. I think it's hard to say they were not successful. But they expect more of themselves. They want more of themselves. Here's the problem for them. I just saw a little clip. A friend of mine is a personal friend of the 49ers center, Jake Brendel. And he was talking about how hungry they are because they've got all this talent and all of this, and they haven't won the Super Bowl, haven't been to the Super Bowl in the last couple of years. So Dallas is not the only hungry team. Dallas is not the only motivated team. I think they're good. And usually, especially with the way preseasons are and the youth of the roster, I think they'll get better as the season goes along. I do think there's a sense of urgency because it has been a minute since they played in one of the last two games of the year.
Yeah, it's been chic for ever since Mike McCarthy took over to say that he particularly is on the hot seat, and this is more of a national media perspective, and also because of the special sauce you get with Jerry Jones constantly talking about the glory days, it's a little bit different than an absentee owner that's somewhere in Europe.
I would challenge you to find me a place where Jerry spends a lot of time talking about the glory days.
Well, I can think of one press conference where they panned over to the Super Bowl trophies at one point, but maybe he's toned down on that.
Jerry's not walking around here talking about, gee, I wish this was the 90s. Gee, I wish our team was as good as the triplets team. Jerry never, I've never heard him say that. Does he want to win another one or two or three? You're darn right he does. But he doesn't talk about that. That's it's valid, I think, but it's a media-driven narrative.
That's why it's good to come here, I guess, and unearth that truth.
Well,
he's the sham god.
He also wants those 88s, and I'm sure he loves all the Michael Irvin jerseys out there, but I was coming in thinking, like, there are still more 88 Irvins than there are 88 Lambs.
Yeah, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, because of what you said. You're out here, though. I mean, you've been working with this team now for over 40 years, but you're out here grinding like a journo. You're at the side press conference asking questions. You're finding out everything. What have you learned in these first 2 weeks of training camp? Anyone flashing? Any surprises? Positions that are a little different than expected?
The flashing is a key word because that is really what you kind of get. I remember Leon Lett flashed, and then you say, I better pay attention to him. And Eric Williams flashed. Now we're talking about a situation where they had 4 padded practices. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get the same kind of handle, and I can't imagine how many of their starters will see play football in the next 3 weeks. So what you get is a sense of younger guys who might have a chance to be something. I think their safety position is pretty good. I think that they have some defensive linemen more than they've had in the past. I think their wide receiver room is vastly improved, not just because they added Brandon Cooks, but because of some internal growth. And Michael Gallup was just a shadow of himself last year. He wasn't Michael Gallup. You know, I thought anyone who watched them play the 49ers in the playoffs could clearly see that, especially when Tony Pollard went out in the second half, CeeDee Lamb was the only playmaker that Prescott had available, which I personally, based on all my years of coaching, thinks I personally think that had something to do with his interceptions, which was an outlier statistic for him. But he didn't have – I mean, I love Zeke Elliott, and I frankly, they've gone a long time without ever asking me what a personnel decision should be. I would love to have him here. I would think he could.
I think they're making a mistake. I think they should.
It's a mistake if nobody's able to play that role.
No, I mean a mistake not having you on the personnel staff.
Yeah, no, trust me, that's not a mistake. But but someone's got to do that, and so what you see out here. So when that's a great example. What do you see? Well, I don't really need to watch much of Tony Pollard. But I do want to see the two guys behind him. Everybody wants to see Deuce Vaughn. But I watched him play in college. I know what Deuce Vaughn is. He is Warren Sproles, I think. Darren Sproles. I think that's who he is. But the two guys behind him, I really like Malik Davis. Dowdle's a guy who's been hurt for 2 years. I think they think of him as more of a short yardage back. I don't know how much of it here you see. You know, you guys just heard Mike McCarthy's talking about they have like two or three more installation periods this week to put in specific things. So when you get into a game, a preseason game, and it's third and one, now let's see who they give the ball to and let's see what they try. Those are the things that you look for. But, I mean, I think they've got some quality all over the place. And is it going to be enough? They have to play complimentary football. And one thing they got to do is find a kicker.
You know, shame on us for burying the lead. We are also journalists, and we've done this entirely. We've had two people appear on our show ever that appeared in a major motion picture directed by Oliver Stone. Jim Brown was one a number of years ago. But you, learned, also appeared.
I think I'm totally intimidated. I have to leave.
Well,
now.
I mean, but we are. You appeared in Oliver Stone's W.
I did. It's too long a story to go into about how I got it, but I did get it. And I'll tell you the big thrill. So I played a reporter who, parenthetically, it turns out was John Dickerson, who is one of my heroes. I think he's just one of the greatest working journalists in America. And he was at Time Magazine when he asked President Bush at a news conference, which I remember watching, what would you say were your biggest mistakes and what have you learned from them? And President Bush could not really answer the question. He had a hard time with it. And, you know, I know him a little bit. When he was the owner of the Texas Rangers, I dealt with him quite a bit. And I was doing Ranger games when he was governor.
Wow.
And he would come up and every now and then he'd sit in a booth and spend some time with us. So one of the great treats for me in that process was about a month before we shot the scene, rehearsing it with Stone and Josh Brolin. And there's nobody in the room but the three of us and a couple of staffers. And so Brolin wants to understand what, and he's really digging. He's getting his hands dirty, trying to get inside George Bush's head. What's so hard about that question? I don't get it. And so I said, Josh, I'm not saying we go to dinner all the time, but I mean, I know the guy a little bit. And then his eyes got wide like that. And I said, here's the thing. I think that George Bush had trouble answering that question because in his mind, you don't have to agree with him, but in his mind, everything he did from weapons of mass destruction and everything else, all of those things, especially in the war buildup, he did based on the best evidence he could get, and he believed he was doing the right thing. So when you have all your people telling you, this is how it is, Mr. President, and this is what we recommend, then what are you supposed to do? That's why you have advisors. So I said, I think the guy didn't answer it because he really didn't think he did anything wrong. He took himself back through the process, and he made the best decision he could based on the information that he had at the time, in his opinion. And the other thing I said to him was, you don't have to agree with George Bush's politics, and you can think the job's a little too big for him. But I'm just telling you, he's really a good guy, and which he is. He is George W. Bush is really a good guy. Mm. He's the kind of guy you would like to hang out with. And that really resonated. Well, just seeing Brolin in his process was, when am I going to get a chance to do anything like that? Then the whole shooting the scene was surreal. Have I got like 30 seconds to tell you one more
sure.
part?
Yeah, sure. Let it rip.
So I come into town the night before we shoot the scene, late, probably midnight by the time I got to the hotel room, and they slide the call sheet under the door. So here's who you're. First thing I thought was, it's midnight, I just got here, please don't let this be 6 a.m. And it wasn't. It was 10 o'clock. Okay, good. Now the call sheet shows you with whom you are in the scene. So here's Rob Corddry, who's playing Shapiro, the press secretary, and Toby Jones is playing Karl Rove, and so they're all standing up along. And I was fine reading until I saw Richard Dreyfuss.
It's a tough one.
Who's playing Cheney, and I'm all alone sitting in this hotel room, and I looked up and said out loud, I looked at Richard Dreyfuss's name, and I said, what the blank am I doing here? But they were all great. It was. I mean, I love what I do. I've got a passion for what I do, or I wouldn't have been doing it so long. But that's got to be the most fun I ever had working, probably because I don't do it very often.
That's wild.
That's cool. I wonder who we're going to get next from the Oliver Stone tree. But we got two good ones so far, Jim Brown and the great Brad Sham. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll be listening to you again this season.
God willing. Thank you.
All right, there goes Brad. Very good. I would say, Mark, so we got Sham God from W, 2006. We got the late Jim Brown from Any Given Sunday, 99. Maybe we get a little Woody Harrelson next?
Mm. I think that would fit.
A little Natural Born Killers.
Fit right into the show.
There's such an obvious choice here. Someone that you've been trying to bring back his catchphrase for the better part of a decade. It's Charlie Sheen.
Chaz Sheen.
I think we're at the point where our careers have been on a slow incline. I'm not saying meteoric, but a slow incline.
Right.
I think we're at the point now.
He's going the other way. We're going to meet.
Sheen, I'm just saying, he hasn't had a ton of airtime. Maybe he's ready to join the Around the NFL podcast.
I think it would benefit both sides now, a little platoon look back.
Yeah, that's a great call. And speaking of Hollywood and just how different is Cowboys camp than anywhere else, I honestly for a second thought it was Tom Cruise.
I mean, so I totally get
where
you're coming
from. Check
out
our socials for the reference. Tom Cruise lookalike.
An incredible Tom Cruise clone who could do the laugh, the gestures. But here's the thing that I'd realize. He's walking by in a Top Gun outfit, which is like not something that the actual Tom Cruise would do, but your reality stopped for a minute when you saw it.
Right, and they came in and took some photos with us.
Could have been nicer.
And
it's like a Make-A-Wish thing. Maybe, you know, Jerry Jones is paying him $1 million.
But the real Tom
please
Cruise wouldn't
up.
Do that for us.
Yeah, please dress
well,
up.
I
so
left
he
it,
would.
Two things. Yeah. I left it purposely vague on social to see, you know, how people react to it. They don't know whether if we think he's the real Tom Cruise or not. Let's see what the response are. Second, he is wearing one of his character's outfits from Maverick. And right now there's a very contentious labor issue going on with the actors. Tom Cruise is maybe the most famous actor and is a kind of a spokesman. If the real Tom Cruise knew that there was a fake Tom Cruise dressing as one of his movie characters, he might have him
Well, that's
I would not mess with Tom
man.
Cruise.
A powerful guy.
So well, I hope he.
I mean, he's handing out business cards and trying to.
Yeah,
get
he's not trying
business,
to.
So.
You can actually. Yeah, shoot him he's a plug. Got a whole media kit. He's got a lot going on.
All right. Any other thoughts? That was great talking to the Sham God, though. Whenever you talk to these guys that have become a part of the show, very nice gentleman. We actually did another, 20 minutes on W, chopping it up, his history with Oliver Stone.
Told us some Oliver Stone nuggets that were juicy.
All right. So what have we learned today? What have we learned? The Cowboys are going to be good.
They're America's team. Cowboys haters will
they could be great.
Will not like this episode. But if you made it this far, you just can't. That means you just love us. So thank you.
Yes, we thank you for that. We thank you, Dallas Cowboys, for allowing us to come by here and set up shop. Hopefully, they'll have us back again in the future. Thank you to Eric, Randy, Parker, and Jay behind the scenes for making this thing go. Very smooth.
Not behind the glass, though. Just in a big hot tent with all of us.
Yes. Thank you to Brian Schottenheimer for dressing like Eminem in 1999. I appreciate his forever young attitude.
Thanks for Eric for standing with me in the shorts gang and showing off some sweet leg tattoos. They did not know.
Oh
existed.
My God, Eric! Surprises. They never cease. Greg, thank you for wearing the longer shorts.
You're welcome.
Mark, thank you for wearing the Panama Jack hat out on the field.
Yes.
You looked very slick, and maybe perhaps we can get a photo of that for the audience.
I will source one.
Okay, very good.
Immediately, ASAP.
Anything else?
From me? I'm good.
All right. We got a long ride back down to L.A. Thank you to everybody for listening. We'll be back Wednesday from SoFi Stadium or the – I'm thinking SoFi Stadium because I'm going to see Taylor Swift.
You gotta catch a bird.
I gotta catch a bird. Only I don't got a bird, so I gotta hit the road. But thank you to everybody. Until Wednesday, you know what you gotta do. Heed the call. Cowboys 11-6, 12-5.
12 wins.
What kind of run do we make?
11.
One playoff loss.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.